The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
People across the world have been reacting to the death of O.J. Simpson, once regarded as one of the greatest NFL running backs of all time. Simpson hit the headlines when he was charged with the murder of his former wife, Nicole Brown, and her friend, Ron Goldman. After one of the most high-profile court trials in history, he was eventually acquitted of both murders before a civil wrongful death suit found him liable in 1997. And then he was later imprisoned for armed robbery and kidnapping in a separate case. How the mighty, though, had fallen. This is OJ.
As a matter of fact, in San Francisco, I think most of the people who knew me growing up were surprised I didn't end up in baseball.
Why didn't you?
I broke my hand. I was a starting catcher on the varsity, and I broke my hand in the first game of the year. And so the rest of the season, I ran track. And I had always wondered, where did all the girls go after school? Well, they went to the track meets. They didn't go to the baseball games. So for the rest of the year, I ran track. And I went out with a track team, and we broke a world record in the relay. I just never got back to
baseball. Do you think you could have made it as a Major League Baseball player?
Oh, I have no doubt in my mind, yes.
Good morning, Mr. Simpson. You understand that you are under oath?
Yes.
Did you, in June of 1994, let's make it more specific, as of June 12 of 1994, in addition to any guns that you've mentioned, did you own any other weapons? Did you own any knives other than kitchen knives?
Yes.
How many?
I have no idea.
Where'd you get those knives?
I worked for a company that made knives.
Standing there, and there's all kind of stuff around, and
what kind of stuff?
Blood and stuff around. You know, I hate to say this, but this is not even that. I'm sorry. I know we got to back up again.
All right. Some excerpts from interviews and others' activities by O.J. Simpson. Could have been big in baseball, but eventually he became very, very big in NFL. I'm joined by Irish filmmaker and producer David Blake Knox, who spent some time working with O.J. David, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Why did you come across O.J.? What was the job you were doing?
Well, I was working for the BBC at the time, and I was making a series about kind of American icons, and both good and bad, I should add. And we made a film about OJ. I spent a week or so with him in LA.
Was this with Ruby Wax?
This was with Ruby Wax, yeah. There's a series called American Pie.
At this point, he had beaten the rap.
He had beaten the first rap. He had beaten the criminal conviction for the double homicide. He had been convicted in a civil court by the Goldman family, and was found liable to pay the Goldman family $35 million for the wrongful killing of their son.
Now, I certainly believed at the time of the trial that OJ was guilty. The fact that he tried to escape in the famous Bronco, which was covered by TV Live and so on and so forth. But he had some very smart lawyers who managed to discredit the police and throw doubt on the case. Do you believe many people in America think he's actually innocent? He was actually innocent.
Well, it kind of polarized along racial lines. A survey was done after his acquittal, and they found that the majority of black correspondents thought he had been framed, and a majority of white correspondents thought he was guilty. Another survey was done about 5 years ago, and it found much the same proportions. So it kind of divided along racial lines.
You know, you're white, you're not black. So maybe if I ask you your opinion when you met him, did he do it or not? They might say, well, that's, you know, we're racially profiling you. But what did you believe?
Well, before I went, I had looked at a number of, research, and I was pretty, I felt he was probably guilty. There were a number of things in his background which suggested to me that there was something kind of slightly strange in his character. I mean, in his first marriage, he had three children in his first marriage. One of his children, a two-year-old boy, drowned in the family swimming pool. And that happened one afternoon. OJ went out to a party that night that he had organized, a dinner party. I thought that was pretty strange behavior. Similarly, his father had separated from the family at quite an early age, and he was reported to have worked as a male prostitute. And he also was what might be termed, what used to be termed a transvestite. I'm not sure if that's still the proper term for it. But there was an edition of This Is Your Life on American Network. And OJ hadn't seen his father for many, many years. His father was introduced in the course of the program. He was dressed in a suit and looked a very conventional man. And OJ, who hadn't seen his father for years, got up and said, "Dad," and threw his arms around him. And it struck me that that was also quite a strange form of behavior, and showed that to some extent he was capable of separating one part of his life from another, and the public from the private, if you like.
Now, when you met him, how did he react towards you? Was he suspicious? Was he standing off a bit, or did he embrace you?
Well, his primary concern when I first met him was money, because his assets were being seized by the Goldman family, and he was very keen that we paid him in cash. And so the opening discussion was really about how we were going to pay him, and the agreement was made we would make an initial payment in cash, and then a further payment would be made after we'd completed filming. He was very uptight about that. He was very tense about how he was going to get paid. Once that had been agreed, he kind of relaxed. And, you know, over the next week, I saw there was a kind of divide in his character. Sometimes he was very easygoing, very relaxed, very affable, very charming. At times he could also get angry and be quite aggressive. And, you know, that kind of swinging between two extremes became noticeable within a couple of days.
Now, you were on the beach with himself and Ruby Wax walking along. What was the demeanor of the beachgoers to OJ?
They were thrilled to see him. I mean, it was quite disturbing. It was Venice Beach, which I'm sure you know has a lot of traffic. And we were walking along the beach, and we were immediately surrounded by a large crowd of people who were patting him on the back and saying, "Good old OJ." I think that was just so much because he was a celebrity, frankly, you know, a big celebrity. And people were setting aside, most of them at least, were setting aside, what he'd been accused of doing. But there was one incident that really stuck in my mind as we walked along the beach. A man made his way through the crowd and came up to OJ and said, "I want to shake your hand." And OJ was delighted, shook his hand and said to him, "Would you like me to sign an autograph?" And the guy said, "No, I just wanted to be able to say that I've shaken the hand of a murderer." And OJ, you know, paled, if that's not an inappropriate term, and, you know, looked extremely agitated, and the man just walked off. And the crowd fell silent at that as well. You know, it was as if a kind of truth had been told that people were trying to ignore, and then suddenly they were confronted by it.
Yeah. A guy called Mike Gilbert, who's a sidekick of OJ's, and when you got a moment with him, you asked him, "So, do you think OJ killed Nicole?" What did Mike say?
Well, there were two moments. The first time I asked Mike, did he think OJ had committed the murders? He said, he paused for a minute and they said, "I don't think you should judge anyone by the worst day in their life," which I thought was pretty extraordinary. A few days later, I was at a party. It was given to for OJ's family, and his mother and children were there. And Mike had perhaps a few drinks, and he came over to me and said, "You asked me if I thought OJ committed these murders. I don't think that. I know that." And I said, "How do you mean?" He said, "Because he phoned me just afterwards and told me what he'd done." And I said, "Did you tell the police this?" And he said, "No, I was never interviewed by the police." I said, well, what are you going to do now? He said, well, when the time is right, I will write a book in which I'll reveal this. And he did that. Some years later, he wrote a book with the title of How I Helped O.J. Get Away with Murder. And he recounted in that book what he'd told me that night.
My goodness, an extraordinary saga. I've heard it parsed this way, that Black America cheered when O.J. was acquitted, even though many of them may have believed that he, in fact, was guilty of killing Goldman and Nicole Brown, but that so many black people had been fitted up by white cops over the years that this was kind of one back for the team.
Yeah, there was a strong sense of that. And, you know, some of the cops involved in the LAPD, they were able to play tape recordings in which they had actually boasted about fitting up black people for crimes that they hadn't committed. I mean, that was very damning. And particularly that the majority of jurors were black. And, you know, obviously they would be outraged, and quite rightly, that to hear cops boasting about fraudulent convictions.
He played a practical joke on Ruby Wax.
Yeah, he played a practical joke. It was, you know, the BBC do this thing called Red Nose Day, in we'd been asked if we would do something for Red Nose Day, and she had decided that it would be funny if she were on a blind date, and when the door of her apartment opened, it was OJ, and that she would think, oh my God, this is their idea of a perfect date for me. So we were set up to do this. We went outside, and as we were waiting to go in, OJ, his first suggestion, OJ was constantly telling me over this period what a great sense of humor he had, you know, that was why he was so good in comic films or comedic films like Naked Gun. So as we were outside, a trolley went by with a waiter pushing it, and OJ took a banana off it, and when he knocked on the door and the door was opened, he rushed in and used the banana like a knife, and pretended to be stabbing Ruby with the banana, which, you know, was a bizarre kind of reenactment of what had happened to his murdered wife. Subsequently, we sent this back to London, and it was sent from London back to America, and it appeared on all the news programs. And then OJ claimed that this was all my idea. And not only that, he claimed that we had rehearsed it three or four times and shot from different angles, et cetera, which was completely untrue. And once again, showed me his inclination and capacity to make up elaborate lies at very short notice.
Do you think that history will ever record the truth? I mean, I remember the trial, we all followed it, and the Marcia Clark, hapless in so many ways, and the extraordinary Judge Ito, who was made fun of every night on the talk shows. But perhaps history eventually will show what happened. I mean, the business of the glove, he had to try on the glove, but he was wearing cotton undergloves, which meant that the glove would never actually fit him. But the line, if the glove doesn't fit, you've got to acquit.
Yeah, well, according to Mike Gilbert, he had told OJ had arthritis in his hands. And according to Mike Gilbert, he told him not to take any medication for weeks before he would try on the gloves. But, you know, the fact that the defense allowed, they were provoked into asking OJ to try on the gloves, that needn't have happened if it was the prosecution who actually asked him to try on the gloves, and therefore played into the hands of his defense.
Well, suffice it to say, David, that you did shake the hands of a murderer.
Yes, I believe so. Listen, before I went, I thought he was probably guilty of murder. After spending a week with him, I was convinced of his guilt.
On that note, David Blake Knox, filmmaker and producer, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.